Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Namir Anani, President and CEO, Information and Communication Technology Council, or ICTC, and an internationally acclaimed leader in strategy, leadership, technology innovation, and policy. Namir, thank you for sharing your work and experiences with our audience.
You're more than welcome. Certainly my pleasure to be here.
So, Namir, to drive innovation in ICT capacity building, what are your specific ICT investment recommendations, for example, involving government and industry, investors, maybe the general public, the individual, and education and research?
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly live in a very fast-paced environment and very global. I think it's clear to say that, you know, some of the important innovators in our society are the youth that we should really target going forward. It's an area that we're particularly focusing on because youth are the future innovators. They're the motor, you know, the driving engine of the economy. And specifically in a fast-paced environment, those are the ones that are digital natives. They're able to adapt business models to new technologies, services, and compete on a local and a global environment. We're focusing on that area and we have programs currently, but we're looking at, government has in Canada has been, the strategy has been very clear in terms of connecting the schools with the highest broadband capabilities. And it's, that's been done quite well. I mean, the next phase is really to get more entice, the young to get into schools, to embrace the ICT environment per se. We're noticing, this has been, the ICT in general has been a very cyclic environment where very few have, or at least the rate of entry into that domain has been not as high as we would like it to be. So I think that everybody has a role. I mean, I see industry playing a major role in trying to entice, sharing some of their strategies going forward, embracing some programs at the youth. It's, as early as high schools on that. We see governments playing a role in that, and it has been. Through different programs, whether the SHRED in Canada, the Scientific Research and Experimental Development, whether the IRAP, Industrial Research Assistance Program, and so forth. Labor sponsor, venture funds to try to entice some, funding of development and funding programs that attract youth in that arena.
Now, Namir, related to the last question, what do you see as the best models or resource links to drive innovation and ICT capacity building? And this is for any country internationally to emulate. And again, this could be around government or industry, investment, the individual, education and research.
Mm-hmm. In the previous question, I talked about the catalyst in terms of how the industry, academia, and others can play a role, government can play a role, with a specific focus on the youth. I'm a great believer in that environment. There are some excellent approaches that are taking place in Canada in terms of capacity building, connecting industry with industry, connecting industry with academic environment as well to bridge the skills gap. You've got organizations such as Communitech that was basically established by Tom Jenkins, who's a leader in the digital economy. He's the chief strategist at OpenText and the Canadian Digital Media Network, where the purpose of it is really to connect industry with academia and open up the door for innovation going forward. There are many examples in Canada. Wavefront is one of them. It's a non-profit national center of excellence, accelerating, some of the growth and success of wireless companies in Canada. I think, it's part of what I'm driving as well as for my organization, which is the Information Communication Technologies Council, with the aim, as we're a national leader in talent solutions, and we provide some very strong technology research coupled with primary data in terms of skills, forecasts, and so forth. But adding to that a dimension, which is the policy advice, and I'm a great believer that putting together an organization that will provide some kind of assistance to organizations going forward in terms of, well, what are the skills forecasts needed for the specific sectors of the economy? What are the policies that are basically that will advance their goal, whether they're economic policies or educational policies on that? So we're trying to provide end-to-end solutions. And I think that concept of a hub that nurtures and helps organizations going forward in every country is a very important dimension. I know in Europe there is the European eSkill Association, which is a community of stakeholders supporting development of eSkills for the digital economy, and I think that's a good model to adopt. As much as what's happening here is create a hub of leaders from the industry, academia, policymakers, armed with good skills forecasts and information in terms of what are the right policies and which provinces more hospitable to certain areas and what could be done in that environment. So I think in essence, to build capacity, I'm a great believer that you need a hub to nurture that development and be able to guide organizations going forward. And my particular focus on the small medium enterprises, because I think this is where the future industries will be created.
Now, what are the top challenges for government, industry, academia, and media?
Well, I mean, I think it's challenges are on many levels. I mean, we clearly live in a very global environment. So the talent issue is one of global nature. I mean, we certainly, as much as we are developing talent in Canada, but we are competing in a very tight labor market internationally. And many countries are advancing, goals in specific sectors, whether the e-health or mobile technology or, the apps and services world. And again, that, those practitioners are certainly subject of, specific immigration policies, and they're, we're competing against others in that environment. I think the other challenge is really looking beyond the traditional industries, because there are specific sectors that are being developed at the moment that perhaps not as much on the radar screens as the ones that I highlighted, whether it's the apps and services world, whether it's the cloud computing, and many other areas that need to be nurtured. These are small companies, small medium enterprises, could be four or five, being developed. They need all the help and support in terms of knowing what are the right approaches, where to access talent to grow, what are the right economic policies, what is taxation, funding, others that help them grow and compete in a very global environment. In the absence of that, obviously, and being a very connected world, these organizations will find other venues, other places to set up and offer their services in that environment. So it's a challenge of talent in a global environment, the challenge of helping organizations to set up and expand in Canada. The third challenge is really how to leverage all the human capital in Canada for the ICT industry. We're a country that's 52% women. However, the rate of participation is not as expected in that environment. So it's one of the dimensions that we're working on to try to entice more young women in this field, given that the pay scale as they graduate is quite interesting. So and also Aboriginal youth and others. So it's really a challenge of global environment, a challenge of helping the industry set up, and a challenge of ensuring that we are able to leverage all the human capital in Canada to the most efficient way and most effective way going forward.
And then what do you see as the top opportunities for government and industry and academia and media?
Well, I think, again, it goes back to the previous question, I think the top opportunities is for, you know, it's part of what we're in discussion with government as well, is the notion of, you know, every country has thought of developing a digital strategy. We believe that, you know, rather than have a broad brush on a digital strategy going forward, and then seek the talent associated with that, is to potentially concentrate on, you know, emerging sectors with the highest contribution to GDP, outputs and jobs, eventually creating jobs. And I think that's where, you know, I see the notion of not only government, really. I mean, this has to be an industry-led, as well as government support, in saying, well, here are the sectors that we really need to nurture in Canada, because it's the ones that, you know, like any other countries are looking at currently with all the sovereign debt issues and the job and employment, is to look at where are the sectors that creates these jobs, try to help them, provide a helping hand in getting them established, having the right policies, providing them with the right talent forecasts, so where to establish which provinces can provide that. The industry should take a better, you know, role in terms of engaging youth in their industries. I mean, ICT is very pervasive, cuts across all industries at the moment, and there should be a way of ensuring that they develop the talent internally, but they also seek it from academia and accelerate that academic cycle. And academia is really to be to bridge the gap between industry needs and where the, you know, where the educational system is going. Because at the end of the day, I think, you know, it's important to have good forecasts going forward of the skill sets. To date, the belief is that we're still developing, you know, still creating the graduates of the jobs of today. We really should be thinking of the graduates of the jobs of tomorrow.
Now, in these next series of questions, I'm going to see if you can provide sort of maybe the best specific examples, almost like the best practices or models for success that others can emulate. And the first question is, what are your recommendations and the best models for ICT innovation programs and ICT infrastructure?
I mean, this, there are many approaches associated with that. I mentioned that in Europe, they have the European eSkill Association, which is a community stakeholder supporting the development of eSkills. I mentioned in Canada the Communitech approach, which brings industry to industry collaboration and bridges, you know, it cross-fertilizes between industries, whether it's broadcasting and the gaming interactive world, and provides that. It's a hub of nurturing innovation, connecting industries, connecting industry and academia, and making that happen. So I think in general, there are many approaches out there that help that development. And but I think it's vital for us in Canada to have a hub, as I mentioned earlier, whether it's a, you know, you call it a digital compass, or that is, you know, enabled by leaders from, you know, a coalition of from the industry, academia, policymakers, that are helping to, you know, with the main purpose and the mandate is to provide good forecasts of where the talent needs going forward, which are the priority sectors, provide some good policy advice, point to where talent needs are, help academia in bridging the gap of that talent need going forward. But it's you know, it's something in progress, and I think all countries are looking in, you know, into this this approach going forward.
What are your recommendations and best models for R&D laboratories? And when I'm speaking about R&D laboratories, I'm sort of talking about universities, you know, partnering with government and industry.
Well, I mean, that's what I mentioned. I mean, there's excellent sort of approaches out there of universities, whether it's Ryerson or others, are really developing some excellent programs. As I mentioned, you know, some of the government-led programs like the SRED, the Scientific Research and Experimental Development and Industrial Research Assistance Program, I think we need more of those. We need more of the programs that target specifically the academic environment to entice them to develop and nurture the next innovators of the future going forward. So I think it's there are certainly great elements that are happening in Canada, but we need more of this going forward.
What are your recommendations and best models for public institutes for supporting ICT companies? And maybe the ICT Sector Council fits into this.
Yeah, I mean, specifically, there are several approaches here that could be done. I mean, one part, our organization is really a not-for-profit. We're partly publicly funded, government funded, and partly the industry. So our model or mandate is really to provide talent solutions for the industries going forward. And as I mentioned earlier, we're strengthening our offering, not only from a technology point of view, but also from and labor market intelligence, but also from a policy point of view, to try to support the ICT industries that are now really, cut across all sectors of the economy, to help them determine really what are the forecasts, what are the talent needs, and how to build that in Canada or how to attract it internationally.
Two sort of related questions come to mind, so I'm going to combine them because they're all about innovation, incubation, accelerator centers, venture funding programs, anything that provide seed funding or entrepreneurship support. And you've mentioned Communitech, but there's others as well. Do you have some other recommendations or best models for anything to do with incubation, acceleration, seed funding, venture funding, entrepreneurship programs?
Well, I think we need, there are some throughout the country, different sort of organizations involved. I mean, the Communitech is really a very good example on that. There are certainly many others. There is Wavefront specifically that helps the wireless industry advance its goals on that. But I think there should be more funding to incubate really the future talent going forward. And that could be either in the form of labor sponsor venture funds or flow-through shares that has been specifically targeting the oil and gas industry. But it could have some, approaches in this environment. I think it's important that we find the next, support that help develop the innovators of the future and connect industry with industry, industry with academia going forward. You can't do it through philanthropy money. It has to be some kind of an approach that will entice some support from, through some sponsor venture funds. I mean, we are doing that. As I mentioned, we have a program called FIT that targets high school students from 11th and 12th grade. Again, we're in discussion with industry with the aim and have got the industry to champion some of these programs with the aim of, one, that they, whether it's from the mobile arena or from the apps world and so forth, one is that they have access to talent of the future. At the end of the day, they can develop some of innovations at a really interesting and cost to the industry by small sponsorship of these programs. But also, let's face it, I mean, if you're connecting with hundreds of schools and potentially thousands of students at the end of the day, you're upselling to that market going forward. So it provides sort of the industry very good entry into the schools by accessing talent, upselling into that market, but at the same time ensuring that they have the supply of talent needs going forward in that environment. So there are multiple ways of providing or creating that incubation in Canada, either through funding, through the industry support and sponsorships, through government intervention, and it may take a multitude of those to make it happen.
Now, this next question is about this whole idea of e-government, and in fact, I just finished speaking at the World Summit on the Information Society in Geneva in May, which is a UN ITU event, and I guess the last summit was held in 2005, so it was quite interesting because it sort of has representation from 190 countries, and then following that, I was a keynote at the Economic Forum in Europe, and they had, I think, 148 countries in some way participating, either directly or indirectly. And it was interesting to see all of the e-government work that's being done worldwide. And when I talk about e-government, I'm talking about e-finance, e-health, e-education, e-business, anything that where the government is involved. Do you have any sort of ideas or recommendations or best models or where Canada is situated in terms of e-government?
Well, certainly there's a lot of development taking place. I mean, within the government for e-services, and certainly I think we're leading the way in that environment. There's always, as technology evolves and citizens' expectations expand in that environment, obviously these have to be rethought, redeveloped, and reshaped going forward. But I think it raises an interesting point that, ICT per se is now so pervasive in every industry. It touches on the way and the industry or government reaches its citizens, does its outreach, whether it's the finances, whether it's how to manage its HR, administration, its data. It cuts across all of that, and I'm a great believer that it's now part of, and that's what we're discussing with government as well, is saying that ICT is now part of the fabric of the HR, and it's important for as a staff, managers, entry level, or senior level, that they have to have the right digital competencies to be able to advance some of the services for Canadians going forward. In the absence of, if they're not knowledgeable about some of the technologies and capabilities, whether it's on cloud computing or others, and social media and how to engage that, for the citizens, is that it will be difficult to provide services going forward and to, participate in the discourse in terms of developing some innovative approaches for Canadians going forward. And I look at government as a model adopter in that environment. So it's, in staffing processes, they should be looking in terms of including digital competencies as part of the HR competencies that they develop. But I'm a great believer that in any country, government is a model adopter and should be the one leading the way in terms of how things roll out.
It's interesting you mentioned that government is sort of leading the way, and it's happening here in Canada. What I found really interesting was the Economic Forum was hosted in Astana, which is the capital city of Kazakhstan, and it's incredible the amount of investment they're doing, just a huge amount of investment in e-government, and they're now ranked second in the world in e-participation, and they're just about to launch an e-education program where it's K-12 university. You can get it all online, your grades, it's a centralized system. I just couldn't believe the level of development. So, and it's interesting at the World Summit, again, all of these nations are putting so much investment in. But also Canada, together with Singapore, is ranked number one or in the top tier in every category in this report from the Global Innovation Policy Index. So out of all of these sort of countries in the world, only Canada and Singapore are ranked in the top tier in every category. So that's something that we Canadians should be proud of. So.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, do you have a sense of how much global GDP is driven by ICT in the Internet and why?
Well, I mean, I know there's been a lot of studies out there and OECD and others on this. I mean, I think it's from a Canadian perspective, I can't speak perhaps from a global environment, but from a Canadian perspective, we know that ICT per se contributes to approximately 5% of GDP, which is $60 billion But that's only the ISP sector. We haven't factored in where ICT plays a role in some of the industries, whether it's administration, whether it's e-health, because we're really talking about just the communication, whether it's broadcasting, telecom, and other industries. But if we factor other industries or the pervasive nature of ICT in other industries, then it will be several folds larger to that. I think Canada is not unique to other countries. If you take that factor to other countries, perhaps it's even larger. But in the next number of years, you can only predict that ICT will play a major role in the economy and growth, economic growth. Just look at the adoption of mobility going forward. And we haven't even started looking at the moment, all the mobility is communication one-on-one, and the future is going to be machine-to-machine. It's going to need more spectrum to enable that, but all of that's going to create its own services, applications that will come with this. And you see the banking industry is going mobile, the e-health instead of diagnostics and telemetry. Every industry is adopting beyond just the normal finance, HR, and administration and so forth. So I think the contribution going forward is going to be tremendous to the global economy.
Yeah, I had a discussion with Rob Atkinson. He's the founding president of the IT Innovation Foundation, which is a Washington, D.C. think tank. And he's indicating now that even in some Western countries, if you look at all the contributions of ICT, it's accounting for something like 50% of GDP growth, or that OECD figure saying that for every 10% increase in broadband penetration, producing a 1.3% increase in economic growth, or total factor productivity gains of something like 5 times due to ICT. It's just incredible what's happening in the world. And I see your council as kind of being the center of it in Canada, right? So
absolutely. I mean, we're certainly keeping tabs and making sure we have a very good feel of that environment going forward. We're, I think, very conservative in our approaches in terms of the impact on the economy and GDP going forward, because even when I mentioned the 5% on GDP, and I mentioned it could be several folds if we count the impact of ICT on other industries, we haven't even accounted for very much of the emerging industries that are happening, the cloud, the apps, cybersecurity, and others associated with that. If we start figuring those, it will be certainly multiple folds of the figure that I've highlighted. In fact, we're doing some work in that arena. I'll be happy to share this, the result of our studies, in the next couple of months.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I know that you're a major center for a number of studies that government and industry, academia, mm-hmm. businesses, just everybody out there should be looking at. I mean, ICTC, you are the hub of the ecosystem of ICT enablement in this country, and everybody should engage. Now, from your perspective, how large is the ICT sector in trillions for, let's say, this year, for 2015, this year in 2015, I should say, versus 2010, and what are the factors driving its growth?
Well, I mean, I think we're seeing, we're seeing the global of ICT growth is growing at a 3-4% annually, and that's a high growth, specifically in an environment that is really, with all the sovereign debt issue and the credit crisis that are slowing down. We're seeing certainly a lot of growth happening in many of the BRIC countries, the China, Brazil, and others, India and Indonesia as well, and, South Africa. These are the countries that are driving certainly growth in that environment, and by doing so, obviously competing with the global talent that I mentioned earlier. Given the fact that also in Canada, as you mentioned, that we are the hub for much of the information and the forecast, we have recently highlighted that in our skills forecast that Canada by 2016 will have, will be looking for approximately 106,000 critical jobs that need to be filled, with the demand far outweighing the supply going forward. So even if we tap into the resources, the human resources in Canada, these countries are going to compete heavily with us going forward from a global talent and potentially from a Canadian talent as well. I mean, we're really in a tight labor market. So I don't have a specific figure in terms of the trillions of dollars, but I know that the total worldwide ICT spending was estimated to be approximately $3 trillion in, by 2010, I believe, USD on that. But, it's something that just gives you an idea that it is certainly a very growing environment and a fast growth area, and it's going to have and many countries are certainly aiming to position as fast as possible in that, because that's where the sectors with the highest growth. I think another figure it's important to say that unemployment in that, at least from a Canadian perspective, we're sitting at maybe 2.6% jobless rate compared to 7.6 across average, across the country in terms of unemployment rate. So certainly there is, there is a demand in that area, and we have to look at how do we position from a talent development with academia, from enticing industries to come up, some of the small medium enterprises come up and set up in Canada to make sure that we're able to develop and leverage the future industries and make them grow in that environment and compete against other countries that are having a first mover advantage in that arena.
You already indicated that in Canada we're going to have a skill shortage in different sectors, and you're making or doing a lot of work in trying to meet that demand by providing these research reports, by working with industry and government, academia, and so on. And I know that this is encapsulated in these job reports that you come out with periodically, so I encourage the audience to look at it when those reports come out. Are they available to the public?
Absolutely. I mean, all of the information that we have is available to the public. There's some information that's specific to an industry sector or province or a municipality, but all the national data is available to the public. And I think it's important also to say that our data is very timely, and we have very strong and primary data as a result of the strong networks that we have with the industry, with academia. So we're able to have focus groups and have the right surveys and the right information. And that is important, because you don't develop policies if you don't have accurate data and information and forecasts going forward. So it's something that we pride ourselves with.
Now, what are the hot technology topics in ICT for this year and for the future?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think, it's one of the aspects that we're driving in our discussions with policymakers going forward, because, as I mentioned earlier, we're a great believer that perhaps we don't have to take the approach of other countries of just, putting several billion dollars in an all-encompassing digital economy, that we have to focus on focus and prioritize and fast-track sectors of the economy with the highest contribution to GDP output and jobs. Through our own research in that environment, we predict heavily that the mobile arena, as much as the adoption has been great so far, it's only the beginning. I think it's the cusp of that. We're at the cusp of an environment that's really evolving fast. As I mentioned, in the next number of years, the adoption rate in mobility is going to, double, triple in that arena, if not more, as a result of moving into, more of the telemetry capabilities of machine-to-machine, whether it's for remote diagnostics capabilities in your automobile and others. So it's one arena that is certainly advancing fast, and there is a reality that there is a spectrum that's being auctioned in the next couple of months and or shortly, and that will unleash new development in that arena. So I think it's one of the hot topics that is happening. Several other countries have already auctioned that spectrum, so there is global talent out there with some strong capabilities in that arena. The other area that we look at, is just the explosion of apps and services. They're seeing far-reaching capabilities in many industries. There are apps for banking, there are apps for gaming, apps for video content. And it's all an emerging dimension that has moved in the last number of years from a sense world to now a really a dollar world, and even on the films and the TV industry, it's even the creative content dimension is attracting very good advertising dollars that are shifting to the internet in that environment. We've seen that with the over-the-top capabilities, the Netflix and the likes that are happening, and that's, I think, only scratching the surface. Then you have the cloud computing. I think it's one of most of the data and the large data will be housed in that arena, and whether it's heritage data, whether it's video content, programming, creative content, whether it's financial, there is certainly an area of expansion, and with that comes really the cybersecurity dimension associated with that. But these the mobility, the apps and services, the cloud computing and cybersecurity is one of among the four that we believe that will be expanding in the hot sectors that need to be fast tracked, and talent to be the issue of talent needs to be addressed closely in that arena for the next 3 to 5 years.
What are the most controversial ICT topics?
Well, I think, many countries are looking at, as I mentioned, with this reality of that we are all, advancing our technological capabilities and advancing certain sectors, comes with it really the competition on a global level for talent in a very tight labor market. So again, many countries, as much as us in Canada, we're looking at immigration policies that will entice accessing. In Canada, there is the demographics that is taking shape in Canada. It's about attracting and helping build the capabilities from within Canada, and certainly attracting the youth in that arena. But at some point, we'll have to depend on also immigration to provide that. So it's one of the topics that as many as other countries are looking at, is to see what would be the right approaches. Do you go from a point system as we have in Canada, attracting newcomers to Canada with the right skills, and hoping that these skills will be and be able to qualify internationally educated professionals and get them in the mainstream of the workforce? Or do we, go for matching one-on-one with the needs of the industry, to say if the industry is looking at, long-term evolution on mobility and they need a specific skill sets going forward, that they can attract that skill set directly. And we've seen some indications that this is taking shape, and some of these policies are being shaped in other countries. I think we have a very good immigration system in Canada, and I think there is some being worked on at the moment to try to advance it, to look at that concept and how do we manage that going forward.
Nimir, can you discuss your major past roles and then, one or more good lessons from each of those roles that'll be valuable to our audience?
Well, most of my career has been in the private industry. The last 8 years has been in government. And then I took on the role of the president and CEO of Information Communication Technologies approximately 6 months ago. In previous roles, they all bring something to the table. When I was at Department of Canadian Heritage, I was the director general of an organization that helped basically, heritage institutions develop their content and engage worldwide audiences. In that environment, I think it was important that the networks internationally getting to know what's shaping and what's happening in that arena, whether from the OECD, the UNESCO, and others, was very, very important. So having a good feel of what's taking shape on a global level will help shape some of the approaches in Canada, because obviously some policies that take place in other countries may impact us, and we need to be really at the table of discussion to help shape that. We are in a very global environment, although we have local issues, but certainly very connected to a global environment. So having a good feel of that is important. Then I joined the CRTC, which is the regulatory authority. Having a strategic view of where things are shaping up in that environment was vital. The communications industry is facing some tremendous challenges. Again, a global dimension as well, where things are happening from, some innovations are taking shape from outside of Canada and reaching audiences in Canada. And it's changing the dynamics of all the innovative environment through the Netflix and the Apple TV and others. So having, again, good forecast, better understanding of where the environment is shaping was vital for developing the right approaches going forward and having a finger on the pulse. I think talent is an important dimension. It's no different, I think, to any industry and the industries that I've been there, having the right talent within your organization to be able to, apart from having a finger on the pulse of what's happening internationally, then having a good strategic view and advantage of where things are happening, having the right talent in an organization is the key enabler. In the selection and the development of that talent, and again, a talent that needs to be local and global in nature as well, was vital going forward. And, the networks, not only from international point of view, but I think, having good industry collaboration, government with policymakers, all of these are the catalysts to make things move in that environment. So it's, the desire is there. I think it's just having the right good approaches and moving on them and making that take shape.
Nimir, you're one of the most respected leaders out there. You have an incredible background of long history and success in many areas, and just so much experience, and I want to tap into that. There must be some resources that you go to get your information or to stay current or to help you. Are there any recommendations you can make about those resources that you use?
Well, we use a variety of data, whether we tap into some ground-level data in terms of the focus groups that we have, but we also have Stats Canada that we rely on some of that information. We rely, we have very strong ties as well with the academic environment. We have very strong ties with the industry to try to have a good feel of where they're needs are in the next number of years. We do our own research of trying to get a better feel of, other sectors that are emerging and where that's happening. We connect internationally. We've got very good relations with the European Commission, with the OECD, many different organizations in Europe as well that are in a similar role than we are going forward. So really, we rely on a multitude of organizations and focus groups, public opinion research, surveys, our own research, to gather all of that information and then put the right analytics behind it, with the aim of providing the right forecasts of where things are happening going forward. I think, if you ask me what, part of what we do is really rely as much on all of that information, whether it's from Stats Canada and others. I think there are things that, you know, the ICT environment is changing in such a fast pace that the NOCs, they call them, you know, the National Occupation Codes, are not really as catching up with the development that's happening or shaping up at the moment. And we have to have a better mechanism, better feel of that environment, because at the moment that ICT is such a fast pace, and we are actually in discussion at the moment trying to sort of develop and see what would be the right approach to, you know, help industries, keep tabs of what are their talent needs of the future and what are the national occupation codes that will suit their needs going forward.
Amir, what are your thoughts on computing as a recognized profession with demonstrated professional development, adherence to a code of ethics, and recognized non-licensed based credentials?
In general, as I mentioned, computing or ICT per se is certainly very ubiquitous in at the industries at the moment. It cuts across all functions of the industry. I think the question of whether it's certified or none, that depends on the industry. There's some dimensions of ICT that warrants, specifically if it impacts some security or safety or others, that may lend itself. In some other dimensions, because the environment is changing in such a dramatic way, that perhaps the non-licensed sort of approach is also applicable. And let's not forget that, you know, some practitioners at the moment are really cross-fertilizing between, you have managers who are non-ICT graduates or, trained, but they're developing these capabilities and they're becoming very apt at it in moving their industries going forward. So we have to recognize that there is a mix between licensed and non-licensed approaches going forward.
We're down to our last two questions, and this sort of next question is about, again, you have this incredible background of just amazing leadership internationally and also nationally and in different roles. So you must come across some events or stories that are amusing or interesting or unexpected. Is there any one that you can share with the audience?
Well, I'm always fascinated when I travel in different countries, see some of the capabilities of how, and how advanced their ICT. I was a couple of months in Singapore on travel, and it was fascinating to see, taking a taxi and the taxi driver that's handing me his iPad, asking me to, because I said, I'm flying Air Canada. He says, well, I've got a connected iPad. You can find your gate where it's going. And then he asked for my mobile to pay directly on that. I think there's many countries are certainly advancing their capabilities, whether e-banking, whether it's the services provided. And it's always fascinating to see some of the advances that are happening in that. And specifically when I was invited to really speak about, some of the work that's taking shape in Canada. But I think, in this global environment, we have to really be cognizant of what's taking shape elsewhere. And there are some countries, just by the fact that, they moved into a different arena. Several countries have potentially leapfrogged us in the adoption of mobile just by the fact that they don't have landlines, and they've done that. But all of that lends itself to, new changes, because as they, get used to the adoption of mobility, with it comes e-banking and all the services associated with that. But it's really fascinating to see what's happening in other countries. And I think for us to really keep tabs of that environment is going to be important going forward.
Amir, I'm going to turn the tables on you in this interview, in that if you were conducting this interview, what one or two questions would you have asked, and then what would be your answers?
A very good question. I probably would have asked what would be the criteria or the catalyst for success in Canada going forward, and how do you see that shaping up. But I think it comes back to the parts of the questions that you were asking. What are the hubs for innovation? I'm personally a great believer, and as an organization, we believe that you know, Canada needs, as much as other countries are looking into this, a hub. You know, we're starting to refer to it as a digital compass of leaders of the industry, policymakers, academia, to help guide and nurture specifically the small medium enterprises. I think this is where our focus should be in enticing that development and one attracting foreign direct investment into Canada by providing the right policies, by you know, providing a helping hand in terms of the talent forecast. Where can they access that from academia going forward, you know, and making that sort of take shape going forward, because I mean, successes of the future is going to be of tapping into the emerging market, the emerging sectors in this arena with the highest potential growth. I mean, other sectors that have from the ICT have certainly growth, but there's some emerging ones that need the support, and many countries are having first mover advantage. We need to certainly position ourselves going forward. So I think that would be, you know, what are the catalysts for success for Canada in the next number of years? Nobody can predict, you know, with accuracy what's happening in the next 10 to 20 years, but I think the 3 to 5 years is very foreseeable, and we need a good structure in Canada to make that happen with the help of the industry, government, and academia to bridge that gap as fast as possible.
You know, before I close off, I just want to make sure that the executives in the audience and the practitioners as well, whether they're from government or industry, business, academia, media, and internationally, I believe that they should put their full support, and I encourage them, behind ICTC and, you know, your programs, your initiatives, your reports, and any other way that they can show their support for this great Canadian institution, and we have something to be very proud of. And Namira, I know your schedule is pretty demanding and you do have meetings coming up, so I wanted to really thank you for coming in to do this interview. We are very fortunate in the fact that you shared your deep experiences with our audience.
You're more than welcome. It's certainly been a pleasure doing so, and more than happy to do this in the future and to share as much information going forward. And we look forward to many successes for Canada. Thank you.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Namir Anani, President and CEO, the Information Communication Technology Council, or ICTC. Namir is an internationally acclaimed leader in strategy, leadership, technology innovation, and policy.